Hey, sale pros, if you're looking to grow in your sales career or you simply enjoy lively sales discussions, we're here for you.
Hi, I'm Tom Bloomer. I've spent over 30 years walking the walk. I've knocked on the doors and overcome the same obstacles you're facing as a seller, sales manager, leader, and VP of sales. I currently assess, build, and train high-performing media sales teams. Let's roll up our sleeves together.
So enjoy listening to Tom and his guests talk sales. Okay, Tom, who's the boomer teaching us sales today?
It's actually not a boomer, Kelly. We have a young sales professional today.
So a non-boomer?
Yeah, it's absolutely a non-boomer, not even a Gen Xer. But it's interesting, when we were first getting ready to do the podcast, I reached out to a number of young sales professionals and just asked a lot of questions. What were they looking for? How could we be of help with the show?
Okay.
The more I spoke with Brian, the more I realized he needed to be a guest.
Really? So what's so special?
Well, he's kind of wise beyond his years. He's been involved in his own startup. He's okay. Working for a company now called StorySlab. That he's going to talk about in the interview. And he really has a great message. It's good for anyone in sales, okay. But particularly for people that are looking to ramp up or that have just either gotten into sales or with a new company doing sales.
Okay, that sounds interesting, but I'm still a little bit confused.
You want to hear about the debate, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, and that was one of my favorite parts. As you'll hear when you go through this interview, one of my favorite debates has always been talent versus desire. You know, that person that's kind of a born salesperson, or you have that person that they just are driven. They want it more than anything else.
Can't you have both?
Well, that would be great. I mean, that's how you get to your superstar salesperson, but not everybody has both. I mean, think of the kids. You were with our kids a lot as they went through a lot of sports.
Right.
I'm sure you can picture some of those kids that just seem to have that natural ability.
And some that worked at it day in and day out to get it.
How many times are we out there with our son hitting all those extra balls, working on
that?
Right. He had the desire to go through. Unfortunately, he had my size and my speed, but he had the desire, right?
He did.
But here's the interesting part. Brian brings a whole special twist to that debate. It was really cool.
A twist?
A twist.
Okay, I got to hear this.
Let's go.
Okay.
My name's Alex from Chicago. Okay, Boomer. Teach me something about sales.
All right. So joining us today, we have Brian Hamer. Brian and I, we met each other on LinkedIn a few months back. Brian, I appreciate the connection. It's been fun talking with you and getting to know you through LinkedIn and some of the posting that you've been doing. You're with StorySlab. You were part of a startup, still a relatively young sales professional, but you've done a lot. Can you give everyone your backstory?
Yeah. So first, I never knew I'd go into sales. I predominantly played basketball. I was super focused on my basketball career. I played in college and played in Europe for 2 years. I was in Northern Ireland for a year, and then I played in Spain. And when I came back, I eventually got injured. I started to look at the real world and started my sales career with my dad's company. He's an energy broker. And I quickly realized that I did not want to be an energy broker. It just... going from something I was super passionate about in basketball to energy wasn't something that I loved doing. So I transitioned into the medical field. I was a medical sales manager in upstate New York. And I loved hearing patient outcomes from doctors, but the actual sales call wasn't for me at the time. I mean, I loved the grind of it. I loved starting a new territory. I built that from the ground up. So I was having success, but there's still something missing in terms of the real grind of the sales. And an opportunity came up in Boston, where I went to college, to start a company. And a girl I knew from overseas, Carrie Shields, and her classmates at BC, they were starting a company called Play Easy. And the basis of it was a B2B marketplace that connected people that host events, so like sporting events, like tournaments, camps, clinics, and they needed to find space for their events. So a court, a field, a rink, any space they need to host their events. So So basically what we wanted to create was kind of a place they go on, search basketball courts, Boston, go look at those courts, put a request in, and now find a court for their event. And I did that for 2.5 years. Obviously, when COVID hit, that was a tough time for events. We were just getting going and driving revenue when COVID hit. So we had to pivot a little bit. And through that pivot, I started to work at another startup called StorySlab. And what attracted me about StorySlab was the market. So StorySlab is a sales tool that helps you sell during a live Zoom, Teams, Google Meet meeting. And obviously with the transition from outside to inside sales, I thought it was a great opportunity and great time to get in that market and start to help people adapt from the outside sales world back into the inside sales.
Okay, so Brian, so you're the pandemic's going on, you had to play easy, now you're at StorySlab. This has got to be one of the toughest times to onboard or to ramp up. I know there's a lot of salespeople going through that. Any words of advice? How's this process been going for you?
It's been going well. I think the outlook I took when I started with StorySlab was to look at the buyer first. Because I think a lot of times your instincts take you to, okay, I need to learn this product. I need to meet everyone at the company. I need to understand how they sell it. What are top performers doing? But I think my mindset was, okay, who are our best customers? Why did they buy our product? What were they going through before they bought the product? How has their life changed since they bought it? Because to me, those answers really start resonating with me of like, okay, if I can understand a sample size of our customers who already purchased it and what they went through before versus after and what it's done for their business and the impact. Now, from a sales perspective, that's going to teach me a lot before I even think about actually selling StorySlab. So that's the approach I took for the first couple of weeks, is really master that.
All right. And sales, you're finding we can still make sales even with everything going on, right?
Oh, of course. People, this kind of goes back to the startup age, is like, you need to find people that are progressive and not laggards. It's a tough time. It's tough to, there's a lot of noise out there with tech. So to ask somebody to invest in anything is a lot. The implementation it's changed for their company. And obviously right now people want to change, but they want the right technology to change. So you need to convince them that, but you also need to show them, hey, like, this is a must right now. And you need to create urgency to get them to actually want to change.
I'm getting the sense that maybe you're a slightly competitive individual. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. I'm definitely competitive. I definitely love winning, that's for sure.
Excellent. So with your athletic background, and when it comes to athletics, and now when it comes to sales, is talent more important than that competitive desire and that drive? What do you think is the bigger attribute to success? The natural talent or that competitive drive?
Oof, that's a tough question. You definitely need a mixture of both. And I would honestly say awareness, you obviously need talent, you obviously need drive. But I would say even in between there is like, you need some awareness of like who you are. Because if you are someone that's not that talented, like we'll put in sports, for example, if I'm not that good at basketball, but I think I'm really good, then I'm going to be the teammate that's taking a lot of shots, but I wouldn't be shooting. And that's not going to help the team. And I think when it comes to sales too, if you might not be talented, but you're aware that you need help, now you're getting more inept to go seek help. So you're aware of that. And I think awareness is huge when it comes to sales and knowing where you are, being able to seek help. But that being said, the drive is huge, because I've been on basketball teams where people have been super talented, but they didn't have the work ethic. They didn't have the drive. They were there just to be there. So I think a lot of companies look for athletes, but I think it's too broad. I think you got to go into the intrinsic motivation of that person, what actually drives them. And I don't think you can check a box saying, oh, they played X sport, so they're going to be good at Y. I think it's more like you have to understand what drives that person to really understand if they'll be a good fit.
Yeah. And I've seen so many sales teams that are the exact same way. You've got people that they just want the status quo, you know, as long as they have job security and they're making enough and things are good, they're not going to push that envelope. And then you have those real go-getters that are always stretching the bar a little bit further. And as an organization, you have to have both. You have to have people that are just going to always get their job done. But you need to see those people that are always kind of pushing it a little bit for, and then people tend to follow along when they get that going.
Hi, this is Kayla from South Jersey. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
So, Brian, one of the things I hear all the time, and especially from some veteran sellers with what's going on right now in 2020, is they're really struggling getting through all the noise that's out there. And there's a lot of negativity, a lot of noise. There's cold emails, cold calls, there's introductions, LinkedIn. How do you find your way through all that noise?
Yeah, it's definitely a tough question. It's not easy, especially with all the spam out there. The person is immediately going to see a message from you, and they're psychologically going to mix you in with all the rest of their messages. So I think it's big not to, especially LinkedIn, not to just connect and start pitching, especially because you come off disingenuous. I think if you go and approach that as, I want to actually learn about this person, I want to follow their posts, what do they care about? How is their business doing? What market are they in? So now when you actually engage with them, you can ask a question that actually meaningful can drive an actual meaningful conversation, and not just, hey, are you guys going through this? Because we help companies do XYZ, and then pushing that out 1,000 times, because I don't think that's very effective.
You're distancing yourself from some of the other people out there, right? A little bit of a more personal approach is always good.
Yeah, I think it's short-term thinking versus long-term. I think you want long-term customers, right? You don't want to just sign those people. So if you go with the mindset of investing in a long-term relationship, which is actually understanding a person, that's going to be end up being the result. So,
excellent. Now, how do you find people as far as reaching them? Are you finding that people are willing to talk? I mean, when you get them, is it typically are you doing a video presentation, the first kind of warm meeting you have with them? Or are you doing a phone call? How receptive are people to giving you time?
Yeah, our sales cycle is a little shorter. Our average contract is about 12 to 50,000. So our sales cycles are shorter. So our first process is either an outreach strategy. So you can be cold email, cold call, LinkedIn. And then from there, the first is a Zoom call. And through that Zoom call, I'm doing a discovery process, which in my opinion is the most important part of the sales process, because that is where you're really uncovering, is there a need? And I think this is where a lot of sales reps mess it up, because to me, the discovery call drives the close. Because if the gap between where that business and that person is today to where they want to be isn't big enough, then that's going to be a tough customer to close. And I think that's where a lot of reps fail.
Yeah. One thing I've noticed, and I would have never expected it, I'm used to always having to track people down, right? You're trying to reach somebody and they finally agree, all right, let's have a Zoom video. And then it could be four emails before you pick that day and time and you actually get it scheduled, or they disappear for a month. I've been using one of those calendar invite services, and it's the most amazing thing. I wish I had it 20 years ago when I was out on the street. You send this little link, they click on it, they book their own time, and then they show up. It's crazy. Does that work well for you?
Yeah, of course. Anytime to create less friction is always a good result for the buyer.
Yeah. If you would have told me, came to me in a dream 30 years ago and said, this is what you're going to do in 2020, I would have said, yeah, that's never going to work. You know, I used to have to knock on doors, sneak around through the kitchen in the back to find the business owner. And now you just send this nice little link. It's pretty cool.
Oh, it's the best.
Okay. So Brian, I had the good fortune to catch you on LinkedIn, I don't know, a couple weeks back. You had been on another podcast, and I was really interested in the story you shared. It was like your biggest sale at Play Easy and how that developed. Can you share that with our listeners as well?
Yeah, it was the first sale at Play Easy. It manufactured over about a year, because as I mentioned, we were pre-product at that point. So we did a bunch of interviews with a lot of private schools in Boston. We really focused on the Boston area. We learned basically how they think about their rental process, their what they use in terms of paper, how they manage it, do they take checks, how does that work? So after we learned all the nuances about their rental business, we worked on building out this process. And what happened was, when I went to go sell this, I was really, people are like, oh, how are you selling the product itself? And I think the biggest thing to focus on, especially as a startup, is the person first, because before you could sell a product, you need to sell to the person and what they believe in. Like, for example, if they're not someone who likes to be first, then it's really hard to, as a startup, to sell to them. If they're someone who doesn't like change, it's really hard to sell them, because obviously you're not established business, you don't have a huge brand, but you still need them to become an advocate. You have to have them believe in your mission, and you need to have them actually believe that you're solving a problem for not only them, but can grow to an actual business. So that person you're looking for is pretty rare. So that was the first thing I looked for when I was getting that sale. When I did find that person, we basically latched on. They essentially became a teammate of PlayEasy at that point. We used to have weekly, bi-weekly check-ins saying, hey, like, this is what we're thinking about for this. Is this a problem you're having? Or, hey, I just spoke with this other school. This is how they do it. Are you seeing that from other schools? Because obviously you want to get a sample size. You can't monetize or start a business based off one person's problem. That problem needs to be for a massive market. So that's what we kind of focused on with them. And over a long story short, over those 9 months, I really learned the nuance of their business, where we could help them. And after getting them on board, their CFO, the president of the school, that deal was closed and they became our first customer at PlayEasy. But I think the moral of that story of a startup is, a lot of times you don't have a product to sell and you have to start selling pre-product and get that out there. I think Reid Hoffman from LinkedIn came out with a famous quote that's like, if you're not embarrassed by the first product you launch, then you launched it too late. And I think that's the approach we took when we launched PlayEasy.
Very good. And I think I love the way you said in the beginning, it's, you got to put the person first. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was out on the street selling magazines, we opened up in different markets. Right. And the first magazine we did in every city was always a lot of fun, because same thing, we're going in, they've never seen it. They don't know anything about us. We don't have a whole lot of good references yet, but you know, we're telling stories, we're showing them. And some of those clients are going to be your most favorite clients ever, because you get to spend a lot more time with them, you know, in the beginning, which is pretty cool.
Exactly. And every job I've taken has been that. Like, that's the what I love about sales. Like, every job I've ever taken is no brand, launching either a company, a product, or a market. Because to me, that's like the most fun part.
So Brian, you got me thinking here as we were starting to talk. I've worked in a lot of different markets, and it's always an interesting debate. In markets where there's not a lot of competition, I find that you have to spend so much time educating the buyer on what you have. But then when there's a ton of competition, you don't have to spend, your clients know what it is, they know what it's all about, but now you have to show them why yours is so much more valuable. It seems like you're going through that a little bit with StorySlab right now.
Yeah, I think we're basically positioned ourselves in the sales enablement field, and sales enablement is a very broad spectrum. It can range from a CRM tool, because you're still enabling sales reps, to a marketing tool, to now a sales tool. So when a buyer hears sales enablement, there's still thousands of tech companies out there that can fit that sales enablement mold. So from a selling perspective, you really have to position that in the buyer's head to a specific need, to get that target in their head. So now when they hear, oh, you solve X problem, now they can be like, okay, I do have that problem, or I don't have that problem. Because at this time in 2020, time is of the essence, and you need to provide value right away, or the buyer is just going to get confused, and you're not going to get the time of day.
Are more companies understanding exactly what sales enablement is, or are you still having to educate someone exactly what your product does?
Well, COVID's definitely expedited that, because sales enablement now, with sales reps that were used to selling outside and now they're forced to sell inside through Zooms, those conversations are tough to have. So a lot of companies now are out on the lookout for sales enablement tools. But like I said, they don't really know what they're looking for. So there's a lot of noise out there. You have to position yourself in the market a strategic way. You have to find a place that your competition isn't, and then get that in your buyer's head to solve a specific problem they're going through.
So Brian, you've gone through it recently. I know, especially right now, a lot of people are either out of work sales professionals, or potentially are very concerned that they may be out of work in the next few months. What can you share? What's a good message for anybody that's going to be looking or looking today?
Yeah, I think especially if you're early out in your career, because it must be a tough time for graduates now coming out of college, obviously with COVID. I think one thing that was important for me is to value knowledge over money. And the reason for that is if you work for someone you can learn from, like a good leader, a good company, you got good people around you, you can really learn from them. And when you get that knowledge over time will now create your value, and your value will then dictate that money. Whereas if you go for money first, a lot of times it could be a bigger company that's more, I'd say, stable. And sometimes when you get that, you have a very linear job, you know your guidelines, you know everything there, you're not creating as much, which means you're really like in your lane. And sometimes, at least in my opinion, what helped me was creating those processes, learning from others, working with people to now scale the business. Like that knowledge has helped me tenfold to in my career to now go with these companies and help scale our processes internally.
Yep. I got to imagine that's one of the ways where your value is going to eventually get the money that you want once you have all that knowledge, right? If you're not looking for it and garnering it at different places, you're never going to get to that value, you know, that you want to have.
Exactly. And that's long-term thinking. Plus, like when you get that knowledge and you understand how that works, especially in your career, it's never going to go away. Like now you're going to be able to learn from those experiences. You'll be able to add so much value to the next organization you're in, because say it was a small company or in my case, a startup, like even if it doesn't work out, you've learned so much that you now can bring all that knowledge into the next company you work for, which creates a lot of opportunity and a lot of upside for you.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, it goes hand in hand as well with, you know, I've worked with a lot of salespeople that never wanted to spend a penny of their own that wasn't reimbursed. You know, they right. looked at, well, you know, the company doesn't give me money to do that. And I know from my day, and I work with a lot of people that would spend money every year. You know, there were things I would drop off a tray of bagels for an account I'm trying to open. You know, if I met them and they were a big basketball fan and I had a chance to get them some tickets, those things are going to pay off down the road, but you can't be afraid to invest like that. So it's good that you're already doing that.
100%. That's a great point too, because I think that's something that's really hard right now through these digital conversations is you learn about that person, you're dropping off bagels, they're athletes that care about basketball, you're giving them free basketball stuff, whatever it is. That's the stuff that's hard to learn about the buyer now, especially digitally. And that's why a bunch of people are getting spammed. So I think, again, those long-term relationships are huge and will pay off for the sales side.
Yeah. And, you know, from a prospecting standpoint and, you know, back in the day, I used to look for ways to find out about business owners. So, you know, when I was knocking on doors, if I wanted to know a little bit about that furniture store owner, best thing for me would be to go there when they weren't in. So I could ask the people working about them and what do they like, what do they do. And then when Facebook started to grow, now I could look up those businesses and I could see what they posted. You know, I could get a feel for what they cared about when I got in front of them. Man, in LinkedIn, you go and look up somebody's profile, you can see where they went to school, what their interests are. I just saw somebody, they did a video on LinkedIn and they talked about how they worked at McDonald's, you know, years ago. Well, I worked at McDonald's for a year and a half. So now when I sent them a DM, I personalized it and had a little McDonald's story. Sure enough, they got right back to me because, you know, you added that little personal touch. So it's all there for everybody to take advantage of. But I get the impression in talking with you, you're looking for all those things to take advantage of. So many salespeople don't. It's sitting there and they just don't go after it.
Without a doubt. And sometimes it only takes a few minutes to go through their profiles though.
When I was out there every day, we didn't have SDRs. We didn't have AEs. I had to do everything, right? From soup to nuts. And some salespeople still have to do that. A lot of companies now, they have these roles. So can you walk me through? Do you have an SDR role, an AE role, anywhere that you've been? How is that working?
Yeah, so we have SDRs, we have AEs, and then we have a customer success team. Being a small team, I'm still doing the full cycle. So I will prospect, I'll do middle funnel, obviously closing those deals as an AE, but then I still have those SDRs that are prospecting and finding me leads as well.
Okay. Now, do you get to work pretty close with them and you know, check on what they're doing and give them ideas? Is that, or is it just come kind of show up in a funnel?
No, yeah, we try to engage as much as possible, especially with the remote work. They're in Syracuse, I'm in Boston. So I think, especially from a camaraderie standpoint, it's important to stay in touch with them. What are they hearing from the market? What are some of the things that those customers are saying to them? And vice versa. If I'm on those sales calls, I might go back to them and say, hey, maybe try this in the pitch. Like, this has been resonating with a lot of people. So we definitely have that teamwork.
Excellent. All right. I want to work on the customer success team. I never got to do that. What is that role?
So basically, it's the onboarding role. So as an AE, now if a customer signs on, now you want to take them to an easy onboarding, which is the real experience of that. So now you're going to onboard them and go through that implementation process. And during that process and after, customer success is in charge of following up, making sure everything's going well with them. Any questions, if they need to add additional people, they want to act as support for renewing contracts. So that customer success team is vital in retention.
Yeah, and they better be good, because I know in the last company I was with, most of our work, the AE did everything, and they were responsible for retention and keeping clients. But the digital products we had, we didn't call it the success team, but they had an onboarder. And I can't tell you all the friction that we would hear when that onboarding wasn't done well. You lose a sale for that account executive, especially if they're buying other products. Man, that can get ugly real quick.
Oh, so true. Especially nowadays, once again, with the remote work, like now you have to make sure like the SDR passes those leads to the AE and that process is smooth. Now when it's closed, as an AE, there's so much pressure on you to give that information to customer success, what they care about, and now have customer success fulfill that process and keep that customer happy. It's huge, and that process needs to be aligned.
Excellent. And now I guess in the very near future, you're going to be then segueing into the sales leadership role, and you're going to keep all these people busy, right? Is that something you're looking forward to?
Oh yeah, hopefully. Right now I'm focused on closing, and then hopefully moving to leadership and coaching some other people.
Fantastic. Hey, Brian, I really want to thank you for your time today. This has been a lot of fun. We've hit on a number of really good topics. I think the listeners are going to get some good takeaways. Is there any one takeaway that you want to really cement in today as we go?
I would say if you think everyone's thinking one way, then try to think something else. If there's a bunch of white dots in the sea, try to be that red dot. Just because something worked for a company or a person last year, 2 years, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, doesn't mean it'll work today. And I think when there's shifts in the market, that speed wins. So don't be afraid to try new things out there. I think it's definitely vital to success to try new things and see what works for you and your personality.
So that's it. That's today's show. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Be sure to subscribe and follow. We hope you make us a part of your week, and don't forget to share with your friends and coworkers.
Should we mention the website?
Sure, the website, okboomerteachmesales.com.
And where can they engage with us?
LinkedIn at Thomas J. Bloomer.
We hope to see you there.